This broadcast of the Poetry Show on Enlightened Radio was broadcast on May 31st, 2023, and it features my co-host Janet Harrison interviewing a wonderful poet from the Northwest, Colette Sell.
Colette wrote a very lovely invitation to this book, and I'm going to have to read that now.
Yes. These poems sprang to life as prayers, not to a specific deity, but to spirits greater than our own. I invite you to read them with that in mind. However, if words like prayer, holy, and sacred are not meaningful to you, please let these poems find a place in your heart.
Thank you. We talked a little bit when she was trying to title the book about how loaded the word prayer could be, but these poems do have a certain reverence, and we want to approach them during, you know, listen to them with that part in your heart, open your heart to them. Okay, Colette.
Do you like me to read?
Yes.
Hey, this is poem 26. The book has 52 poems. Number 26, let me be a mourning dove's marmalade. Let me be a nodding minuet of feathers. Let me be footsteps whisking lightning under a chair. Let me be linen covering iron bells in the cypress. Let me be John Singer Sargent's Madam X as Madonna. Let me be the opal eye of the trumpet swan. Let me be Richard Serra's rusted curve and Marguerite Duras' wasted arms. Let me be a Calatrava crossing one side to another. Let me be a glass falcon in a sightless storm. Let me be a crescent bowl of grace now.
That poem is just packed with imagery. And really original and striking imagery. There's nothing cliched anywhere in this poem. And I wondered, there's a couple of things I want to note on this poem before we start talking about it. One is the anaphora. Each line starts out with let me, and that builds, the tension builds. It's really deliberate. And the other thing I wanted to note is that it's actually what would technically be called a list poem, because it's a list of images.
Yes.
That converse with each other. And I was wondering how this started with you. What was the beginning of this poem for you?
Well, I think all of these poems started with a certain kind of longing. So what I always have to be in touch with when I'm writing is, what's that longing? And I may not name it, often I don't, but I experience it. So you mentioned reverence before, and that certainly is part of it, Janet. The other way that a lot of these start is that I hear a line or a phrase. So somehow I heard mourning dove's marmalade. I have mourning doves in my yard, so it's not a far reach to include them in a poem, but to follow that with marmalade was, I don't know what to call it, destiny. It came to me. And the rest of it came line by line in exactly this form, actually.
Yeah, we were talking about the inspiration, which you just addressed, and revision yesterday. And you said when you revise, you have to get back into the same place where the poem came from.
Right.
You talked about not only having the same mindset, but a beautiful phrase. You said you don't only have the same mindset, but you have to have the same heart set. And I thought that that was absolutely lovely.
That's exactly right. When my editor would send back suggestions or questions and that required me to go back into the manuscript, I couldn't do it any old day or any old hour. I had to, sometimes I meditated, sometimes I lit candles and surrounded myself with items that might be on an altar. Other times I just sat quietly, but I I had to convene exactly that, the right mindset, but also the right heart set. My heart had to be open, and I had to, it's almost like feeling a tingling on my skin that assists me in the work. And I don't want to sound too magical about that, but that is the truth. And having, if I am able to convene that part of myself, I can go back into the poem. And I think I said this to you yesterday, Janet, I have to go into the center of it and push out. I can't just take a word here or there and fix it. If I go to the center and then work my way out to find if there are flaws or there's an upset in the rhythm or a word that's not precise enough, I have to work from the center out. And it's my center too.
And the other thing that I thought was absolutely brilliant about the poem is the ending, when you go, let me be a crescent ball of grace, but then you go, now. And that just punches the whole poem and creates a certain sense of urgency to it that I thought was remarkable.
Thank you. There's a certain immediacy about a number of these poems, or urgency, if you will. Maybe that's born of my age. I'm 75, and I can't, in good conscience, say, give it to me later.
I heard that, sister.
Let me be this now. And the longing is quite immediate.
The marmalade, was it because it started with M? Morning doves.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, John, but I certainly think you're correct in that. when I, you know, I read these aloud over and over to make sure that they have the right music. Now, Morning Doves Marmalade came out just the way it is. But when I say it, the double M's of morning and marmalade are very pleasing.
Right.
My mouth and on my lips. So I think it's quite astute you to point that out. I hadn't thought of it in that way, but that certainly is true.
I noticed that when I sometimes try to say, to find the right word, just in an ordinary conversation, that, you know, I'll lean toward a word that starts with the same letter as the one that I just uttered. you know, whatever happens, it'll sound more musical than what I was about to stumble over, you know, kind of thing. But so maybe it's a similar impulse of some kind, yeah.
When I talk about the music, and I'm not the first person, nor will I be the last, who ever spoke about music and poetry, I'm certainly very much aware of that and rhythm in my work. And Janet, yesterday we spoke a little bit about inspiration or art versus craft, and I think the craft part of this, of my work in general, has to do with the skill of making music and making sure that is, that there's truth in that somehow. The truth obviously comes from the art or the inspiration or the emotion, but the structure has to fit with that. And for me, has to be musical.
Well, let's go on to another one of your musical poems.
Okay.
Before you do that, have you tried putting them to music at all?
You know, I haven't, John. I read at a salon here quite frequently, and I have this fantasy, but I've never done it, of having a drummer come with me to do the poem. But I haven't done it. that rhythm, I think, for some of these and other work of mine would be quite interesting to do. So this is number 16. Bring me to my knees where the violet trumpet vine winds through cactus. The weight of olives arches overhead. The sky sucks water from the well, leaves behind the dust of haste. A grasshopper not yet baptized by the rain searches for grass forests. I sing to him of thickets inside skin, the tangled membranes make. In some other darkness, we converse of pruning limbs as water cracks the well. Old iron reveals the blacksmith's forge. Heat summons the scent of limes through terracotta squares. Let these words be an offering. I hold cupped hands to heaven.
Oh, that's a great close. I like that.
I love that close. It reminds me of a phrase from an Irish poem that I cannot remember the poet. I can't find the phrase. I remember the line. I've never forgotten the line. I hold my heart up like a cup. But that I hold cupped hands to heaven has the same power.
Yeah, that's very nice.
I like the idea of these poems, not just as prayers, but also as a certain kind of offering. At least some of them are certainly offering them to readers, offering them to my extended family, even offering them back to myself. And the idea that I'm offering them to a greater spirit, a beloved spirit, is important to me.
You know, I was reading a summary of Gnostic teachings, and one of the things I had never heard of before, was a professor from Yale someplace was talking about it, was that the Gnostics looked at the prayer, the parables and the Gospels of Jesus, and said, how could he have a father like the one in the Old Testament? That makes no sense. And they asserted that the Old Testament God was not Jesus's father, but there was another higher God, okay, that was more in line with love, of which there is very little in the primitive one, right? And, you know, the authorities repressed it at some point. It took them a couple of hundred years, like everything else. But but that, because it didn't conform to, you know, the role of, I suppose, most religion in state power. But in any event, I always thought that was an interesting dodge to try and find that that heaven is as friendly as your poem.
Did you say an interesting dodge?
Dodge. Yeah. Well, yeah. No, the right. We don't like the Old Testament, so we're going to invent something that, I don't know. We're going to have a straighter line to heaven than having to wind our way all the way back through the Jewish law and you know, to the oldest days. And I thought that was a kind of he called it a dodge.
Accepting her invitation, you know, these poems sprang to life as a prayers, but not to a specific deity, but to spirits greater than their own. So this is not to a specific, this is not limited to a specific religion or spiritual practice. These poems have this beautiful universality to them. They resonate, and this poem resonates beautifully with nature, the idea of conversing with a grasshopper. And that one line that I really love, old iron reveals the blacksmith's forge. I think it's a beautiful line about how even when the iron is old, it carries with it a sense of the beginning of where it came from. It came from a blacksmith's forge. So I just think this poem is remarkable, and the imagery is very, very beautiful.
Well, thank you. It's this is a poem that's especially about one place where I was writing it. So all of these things were playing, and some of them are invented, but it's, you know, I spoke about convening a certain heart set, and that I was in a place in a courtyard in San Miguel de Allende where I once had a home. And I was doing a poetry workshop there, and in the courtyard were many of these elements, and it was a square courtyard, like an old Spanish house, with two stories around it. So it was the scale and the space was comforting. And I was able to, I felt very content there. So I was able to write this poem. The olive trees were there, the violet trumpet vine, cactus elsewhere, but there. The well, which had iron bars bracing parts of it, hand-beaten iron bars. Terracotta tiles on the flooring and limes.
Are you trying to convey, I mean, I'm listening to your those lines and wondering what it evokes in me, just because of my peculiar outlook on things, but is the, you don't see, in the object that you use, whether it's a grating or whatever else, you don't often really see the human labor that went into making it or the process. Yes. Or whatever. It's creation is almost, you know, it may not be invisible to you if you think about it, but it's not the part you use. You didn't buy it for that part. Its usefulness to you is what usually is the world. And so you don't see that deeply behind it as easily anyway in everyday life. That's what it occurred to me when you were, maybe I'm on the moon.
And the movement from that line, old iron reveals the blacksmith's forge, the heat summons the scent of lime. You have the heat of the courtyard, but you also have the heat, the remnants of the heat of the forge. And yes. There's a lovely transition there. I just thought that was very masterful.
Thank you. Again, that came to me. I was conscious when it came to me that was the right thing to say or to write.
Well, let these words be an offering. I hold cupped hands to heaven.
Now, John, back to your comment about the agnostic and their idea that there must be something higher than God that embodied love is... that's an idea that's very close to me. I mean, I don't necessarily believe in a God that is anything like an Old Testament God, but I believe in love and the mission of that in my life, certainly. There was a time when I was very, very ill and I was suicidal. Because I felt like I was no good to anybody. I was just costing everybody trouble. And I remember exactly where I was sitting on a little porch off my bedroom one day and thinking, well, every day I can do less. And today I can absolutely do nothing. And I spoke to myself the words that you can love and be loved. And you have to decide if that's enough. And I decided that's enough. And that's where I've tried to live. And that's the place that these poems came from.
Is that when Janet was opening up and discussing the prayerful tone of the writing, there are lots of different kinds of approaches to poetic voice. For example, when I heard the musical element in your poetry, I was reminded of Joy Harjo, you know, and the fact that, you know, she had a jazz band that was to go with it, right? And but her poems are just strikingly different, yet that they're not well. I suppose there's similarities between all, but I hear a very different voice, and I like the musicality of both in a way, even though they're not, subject matter is not the same, not really, I don't think, but I just wondered if more poets, well, and Bob Dylan just got the Nobel Prize for Literature, so, you know, right. I mean, so this intersection of music, song, verse, is that I'll be coming into a whole new universe of what we call a poem here. I don't know.
Well, that's a big question. And I don't think I can predict the future of music and poetry, but the poets I have loved and continue to love, and there are many, but convene both that some unnamed spiritual force and musicality. Mirabai, Rilke, Lorca, William Carlos Williams, Denise Levertov, Wendell Berry, who wrote Sunday morning poems that are lovely. They have something in common with the poems I've written in this book. Lee Young Lee, contemporary poets, Jennifer Boyd, and I don't know if I mentioned Denise Levertov, but also Jane Hirschfield, or Hirschfeld, I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. And of course, hearkening back to ancient poets, Hafiz.
I'm not as familiar with that. I know that Pablo Neruda wrote an entire book of odes, like every day or every Sunday he wrote one for forever, it seemed like. And the ode quality is kind of prayerful in a lot of ways, isn't it?
I don't know. I know Neruda, of course, but I don't know that I'm writing it down so that I can.
I think he wrote 360. I think he wrote 365 of them. Oh, Janet gave me the book, so she would know.
I don't know how many, but he did write a lot of odes, and he wrote them interesting to ordinary things. One of his most famous is Ode to Socks.
Right. Well, I think it's
so it's just lovely spending this time with you, Colette. Thank you.
Well, it's such a pleasure for me to engage in a conversation about certainly about my work, but also in the larger view about the things that we've been touching on, poetry and musicality, love, offerings.
Yes, we had a message in Meeting for Worship some weeks ago from a dear friend of ours. And one of the things he quoted, I think, was Lorraine Hansberry, the dramatist. And she said, there's always something left to love.
Oh, that's so beautiful. There's always something left to love. Wow.
So I don't know where the quote came from, but he mentioned it in Meeting for Worship, and it stayed with me. I've been meditating on it.
You might be able to hear my pen scratch. I apologize, but I have to write it, or I'll forget it.
Right, take notes. That's right. But well, I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much for.
Well, we have one more poem I wanted to close with, John.
Oh, okay. Let's. Oh, well, thank God. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Janet's favorite. So this is by special request. It's number 45. The morning breaks me open. I've been waiting all night long to walk barefoot by the lake, dew on silver-painted toenails dragging through the seagrass where bullfrogs begged at dusk. This place is holy all the time, but I feel it most in morning, at moonset when the feminine has just recharged the sky, her silver fully spent before the revelry of dawn. I think the sun is glory, the moon grace, fastened together with knots of irrevocable vows, sealed by unexpected mercy, loosely braided with cold bait. Eagles plunge from white pine nests, catch gleams of mirror fish just out of reach, loons in water temples and baby muskrat kits blinking in the light. Spirit, tell me, why is no one crying at the beauty and the burden?
Wow. That poem is lovely from the first line to the last line. It is my favorite in the book, but I love the close. Spirit, tell me, why is no one crying at the beauty and the burden?
Yeah.
And if we pay attention to the world, sometimes there's just so much pain, it's hard to hear the pain of the world. But there's also so much incredible beauty, so much to be reverent about, you know, so much to be praised about, so much to acknowledge, to attend to. And it's just the fullness of that is really in this poem. This poem really says it for me. This place is holy all the time.
That was almost the title of the book, This Place is Holy All the Time. Collecting Wonder Where We Will won out because I thought it was more accessible in a certain way. But I when I wrote that, I remember thinking that that's it. That's enough said. It could be a one-line prayer.
Yes.
You know,
well, thank you both for this opportunity. Yes, John?
Well, it's been great. I was trying to ask myself whether after reading some of your poems and hearing you talk about them, if I hadn't known you were from Marin County, I might have guessed you were from Marin County. And I was there a long time ago, and I remember the had a very kind of unique and interesting Mendocino was where I was hanging out at the time, and I remember there was a lot of poets and a lot of people writing poetry, and this was, well, you and I are about the same age, so
yeah.
Anyway, and I remember it was just a very rich and fertile kind of but very much focused on, you know, this the amazing beauty of that area, and especially if you came from the industrial places that I came from, it was like, you know, gee, maybe Middle Earth really does exist.
That's lovely. Yeah.
Anyway,
well, I've been here for many, many years, and you know, there continue to be poets here. Now there are a lot more tech gurus and billionaires than there are poets, but yeah. We persevere, and a lot of my inspiration comes from the living in the house I do, where there are memories and figures all over it. Like, it's like being inside an altar, as is my garden, like being inside an altar, because I've gardened here for 40 years. So that's part of what I convene here. And so it's not necessarily about Marin, but it is certainly about place.
Are we, take us out here now, Janet? Is that your plan?
Yeah, I wanted to end. I just wanted to, again, you know, I will reread Spirit, Tell Me, Why Is No One Crying at the Beauty and the Burden? And, you know, go out and pay attention, you know, there is so much beauty beyond, there is so much pain, but there's also so much beauty. And I think Colette's collected wonders and shared them with us and reminded us that there is wonder, and that wonder is important. And it's important to pay attention to what makes us wonder and to collect those wonders. So go out and collect your own wonders, and to go out and buy Colette's book, because it's absolutely amazing. And it's a book that you'll want to have and read and reread.
Well, we'll certainly put a link to the post that we do on the podcast. Okay. And I'll send you a copy of that, you know, so that you can treasure it, hopefully. Anyway, thank you so much, Colette, for joining us today. You're listening to Enlightened Radio, www.enlightenedradio.org. And if you have problems finding the player on your phone, go to player.enlightenedradio.org. The podcast recording here today will be on podcasts.enlightenedradio.org as soon as I get them all up this weekend. Anyway, so it's been wonderful to have Colette join us on the show, and I hope you great success, you know, at this age where every day is gravy, you know, like then you can get a wide circulation and can fulfill your passion for poetry. You're probably waiting a good part of a lifetime to get fully into it. And I think it's great. It's beautiful stuff.
Thank you both. I do want to mention that a new work that I'm writing is on my Instagram account, and that address is at Colette's Desk, Colletts Desk, all one word, no apostrophe. And so if you're interested, you can also follow new work there.
All right. Wonderful. All right, Janet, I guess we'll see you next week, okay, if not before. Yeah. All right, everybody. Take care of each other. It's late, but everything comes next.